We're holding on Chof Vav Amud Aleph, the last Mishnah, second line from the bottom. We said in the previous Mishnah during the Sholosh Regalim, we consider the Amei Oret to be Tahar, even though usually throughout the Regalim Morning Aaron, even though throughout the rest of the year we say the Amei Oret are Tamei, but on Yom Tov, the Chachamim changed that and relaxed that rule and said we consider them Tahar. We brought the Pasuk in that connection, Ke'ish Echad Chaverim, that when the Jewish people gather, Ke'ish Echad Chaverim, then they're all considered Chaverim who are not Tamei. However, And we mentioned yesterday that Rashi elsewhere says the reason is in order not to embarrass them. The Rambam says because the fact is they are Matahar themselves. Anyway, the fact is that we don't necessarily know whether they did, and certainly according to Rashi, we don't necessarily know that they did. It's just in order not to embarrass them and in order not to have that they're going to think we're staying apart from them even on Yom Tov, even when we're all gathering in the Beis Mikdash. Therefore, they're going to go build their own Beis Mikdash. So, but after Yom Tov, the fact is, they were Tomei, and therefore, after Yom Tov, anything that they touched retroactively is Tomei. So now, the previous Mishnah had said that after the Yom Tovim, they have to be Metaher, the Kalim of the Azara. Because after all, among the people in the Azara, so you have, say, a Kalim in the Azara that conceivably could be touched by even Yisraelim who are Amei Aretz, and then you have even the ones in the Heichel might have been touched by Koyanim who are Amei Aretz. So the Mishnah had said that after each Yom Tov, they would have to tovel all the kelim in the Beis Mikdash. So now our Mishnah continues. Ketzad ma'avirin al-taras azara. How would they do that? How would they ma'avirin for the tara of the azara? We said yesterday that the ma'avirin has several meanings. Rashi says it means to move the kelim from their places and tovel them. The Tosfos Rid says it means to announce. And the Me'iri says that means they set aside all their other jobs in order to do that. Anyway, how do they do that? Matvilinus ha-kelim shahoyi b'mikdash. They would tovel all the kelim that were in the Beis Mikdash. In case the Amei Aretz had touched them. Va'omrin lahem. However, they would tell the Kohenim, the Amei Aretz, to begin with, even during the Yom Tov, hizaharu, be careful, shalei tigu b'shulchan, that you don't touch the shulchan. Because the Shulchan, specifically, as we're going to see in the Gemara, you're not able to move it and tovel it because the Lechem Aponim has to constantly be on it. So therefore, if the Amei Aretz were to touch the Shulchan during the Yom Tov, and we're talking necessarily Koyanim Amei Aretz, because the Shulchan is inside the Heichel, Yisraelim have no business going in there anyway. But among the Koyanim, if the Amei Aretz touch it, there's going to be a problem because after Yom Tov, then they're not going to be able to tovel it. So they have to warn the Amei Aretz, even during the Yom Tov itself, not to touch the Shulchan. Continues the Mishnah. Kol ha-kelim shayu b'mikdash, yesh lev shniyim u'shlishim. All of the kelim that they had in the Beis Mikdash, they had duplicates and triplicates. The purpose was, she'im nitmu ha-rishonim, this way, in case the first one becomes tamei, yovil shniyim tachteim, then they can use the second one instead. Now, after Yom Tov, when we're toveling the kelim, which kelim do they need to tovel? Kol ha-kelim shahu b'mikdash to'unin tevila. So all of them require tevila. Chutz mi-nit, which would include the shulchan, which is why we said, therefore, we tell them not to touch the shulchan in the first place. Chutz mi-mizbach ha-zahav or mizbach ha-nechoshes, with the exception of the two mizbechas, the golden mizbeach that's inside the heichel and the copper mizbeach that's outside in the azara. Because those are considered like the ground. Namely, the outer Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the Pasuk calls it Mizbach Adoma. The Pasuk says it should be a Mizbeach of Ut. And what that means is, actually, that the Mizbeach HaChitzen, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, was made of pieces of wood that were joined together to make a box shape, but it had no top. Every time that they would, whenever in the desert, where every time they set up a Mishkan and camp, they would fill up the inside of the Mizbeach HaChitzen with dirt. So therefore, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, so Rabbi Eliezer says, therefore, the Mizbeach HaChitzen is considered like the ground, because the Pasuk calls it Mizbeach HaDama, and therefore, the Mizbeach HaZahav, as we're going to say in the Gemara, is like that as well. Even though the Mizbeach HaZahav is not like that, it had a top. It wasn't filled up with earth. It was, the pasht was a solid block of wood. Nevertheless, it still has the same din, says Rabbi Eliezer. It's considered like Adama, as we'll see in the Gemara. In the Bais Hamikdash, by the way, it's not so simple. I mean, on the face of it, the Mizbeach in the Bais Hamikdash was made out of stones, and in that case, of course, it's not Makabel Tumah. It's literally attached to the ground. However, based on various psukim and various other things, it seems that maybe there were at least certain times during the time, during the period of the Bais Hamikdash when they did in fact have a Mizbeach and a Choshes, and then you would still have, then this din would be applicable. When they had a Mizbeach made out of stone that was built on the ground, then of course that's not Makabel Tumah either. But anyway, that's what Rabbi Eliezer says that the Mizbeaches are not Makabel Tumah because they're considered like the ground. The Chachamim say because they're plated, meaning they're plated with gold and copper respectively. Now, what does that do? What does that have to do with them being Tomei or with them being Makabel Tumah or not? We'll discuss in the Gemara a couple of possibilities what the Chachamim mean by that. So the Gemara starts off. Tana, we learn in a Braisa that when they told them not to touch the Shulchan, they actually told them, Hizaru Shematigu B'Shulchan Uva Menorah. A Braisa actually has the version that says that they would tell the Amei Ha'aretz, the Kohenim, the Amei Ha'aretz, who, when they're coming in, let's say to, Rashi says they could be coming into the Heichel in order to bow to Hashem over there. Generally, you can't just go into the Heichel for no particular purpose. So they're going in there either to do the Avodah or to bow to Hashem. So if they're going in for that, so they would warn them, that says the Braisa, not only not to touch the Shulchan, but also not to touch the Menorah. There are, by the way, in the printed Mishnayos, you can find ones that also say the word of Amenurah, but the Mephoshim on the Mishnah, the Batanura and so forth, explain that that doesn't belong over there because our Gemara is going to say specifically that that the Mishnah, that the Tana of our Mishnah did not include the Menorah. So therefore, so the Braisa holds it, but the Tana of our Mishnah disagrees. So the Tana began my time of Tony Menorah. So why indeed does the Tana of our Mishnah not mention the menorah? And the reason is Shulchan k'siv be'tomid, menorah like k'siv ba'tomid. Because the difference is by the menorah, it doesn't by the Shulchan it says that you have to have lechem ponim, you have to have a lechem ponim lufonai tomid in front of me on it tomid constantly. So therefore, there always has to be bread on the Shulchan, and therefore they can't take it off in order to tovel the Shulchan. As opposed to the menorah, the menorah doesn't say tomid. Now it does. It says by the menorah that the me'erav ad boker tomid. However, the tomid over there doesn't mean that it has to be burning 24/7. What it means is that every day you have to give it enough oil to burn from the evening until the morning. So therefore, so fine. The lamps go out in the morning, and then they would be able to take it out and tovel it. But when it says about the Shulchan Tomid, it means the Lachem Aponim has to be on there all the time, with the exception of they take off the old Lachem Aponim on Shabbos and put the new Lachem Aponim on the same Shabbos. There is actually, in fact, the Mishnah in Menachos, in fact, describes how they would have, there's two different opinions over there, but one opinion is that you could just have, they take off the Lachem Aponim and then they replace it later on the same day. So it doesn't matter if it's without Lechem for a couple of hours. I think it's Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda said that. But the Chachamim over there say that what you actually have to have is literally as one group of Kohenim is pulling off the old Lechem upon him, another group has to be putting on Lechem upon him, standing right opposite them, sliding new Lechem upon him into place. So the Shulchan can't remain without Lechem upon him, according to that opinion, for even a moment. And even according to Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, it's only on Shabbos that they remove it. And Shabbos, you can't be toveling the Kalim. So therefore, so that's why they would warn the Amei Oret not to touch the Shulchan, but that's why the Tana of our Mishnah doesn't mention the Menorah, because the Menorah, no problem, you can tovel it during the day, which is, it doesn't have to be burning during that time. Actually, Tosfos points out, you did have the Ner Ma'aravi, you had the one of the lamps of the Menorah that would burn longer than the other ones, that was a special simen for the Jewish people that Hashem was on their side. So during the time when the Jewish people were acting correctly, then the Ner Ma'aravi would burn longer than the other one. Tosfos says, okay, the fact is, it's still not required. I mean, the fact is it would burn all day, but it didn't necessarily. It depended whether Osin with Sonish or Mokum or not. So So they would always light it first because they light all the other ones from it, but not necessarily would it be burning through the whole day. If it was, then yeah, obviously they wouldn't be able to take it out to Tovah L'Nizer. But therefore, our Tana doesn't mention the Tana of our Mishnah, therefore doesn't mention the menorah. The Idach, so what would the Tana of the Braise answer to that? He would say, Kivin dechtiv v'asa menorah noicha ha-shochan. Fine, it's true, the menorah doesn't have to be lit 24/7. But since the Pasuk says the menorah has to be opposite the shochan, kiman dechtiv b'tomid dummy, then that's as if it said tomid by it. It means, in other words, that as long as the shochan there, the menorah is there, the menorah has to be opposite it. Well, since we're saying the shochan has to be there 24/7 with the lacham upon him on it, then therefore so does the menorah, says the Tana of the Braise. Therefore, they couldn't take out the menorah and tovel it either. Therefore, they'd have to warn the Amei Aretz not to touch it. The Idach, what about, what would the Tana of our Mishnah answer to that? He would say, that's not what the Pasuk means, that as long as the Shulchan is there, the menorah has to be there. That Pasuk is just coming to tell us where the menorah should be. The Pasuk tells us that you place the Shulchan in, so you place the menorah in the Heichal, you place the Shulchan on the north side, and then it says there's a menorah, no Shulchan, and the menorah has to be opposite the Shulchan, so it's just telling you where it's supposed to be. And in Menachos, when it discusses the layout and the positioning of the Kelim, then it says, just that it mentions over there that the Shulchan and the Menorah were equal distances from their respective walls. The Shulchan was 2.5 amas from the closest wall, and the Menorah was 2.5 amas from the closest wall. But nothing to do, says the Tana of our Mishnah, with that the Menorah has to be there all the time that the Shulchan is there. You could very well have, if the Menorah becomes Tomei, they can take it out and close it. Now, the Gemara asks, so we're saying in the Mishnah that if the Kohenim, if the Amei Aretz, the Kohenim, the Amei Aretz touch the Shulchan, then you have a problem because you can't tovel it because the Lacham Aponim needs to be on it constantly. By the way, this stuff, the Lacham Aponim has to be on it constantly. What's the idea behind it? There's an explanation in Mephoshim. Through the Shulchan, Hashem sent down Shefa and Parnasa to the world. You have, I think the Ramban talks about this, Alderach, like you have, for example, with the story of Eliyahu, and then with the story of Elisha, where there was a tiny bit of oil, and then in the case of Eliyahu, the widow who was taking care of him had a tiny bit of flour, and a bracha from Hashem rested on it, and therefore she continued to have flour, and she continued to have oil. So in the same way, the bracha of Hashem always needs to rest on something. So there has to be bread on the Shulchan at all times, and that way the bracha of Hashem can rest on that, and then from that, the rest of the Jewish people, that from that, there can be bracha for Parnasa for the Jewish people wherever they are. If the bread is removed from the Shulchan, then you're losing that. So that, therefore, it has to be there constantly. So the point is, we're saying then that the Shulchan is able to be Makabel Chumah. Now the question is why? But typically, we should be able to say that the Shulchan is not Makabel Chumah. The Kli Eta Osir L'Nachasu. After all, the Shulchan is a wooden keli that's meant to stay in one place. V'chol Kli Eta Osir L'Nachasu L'Metame. And such a wooden keli that's not meant to be moved around from place to place is not Makabel Chumah. My time, the Dumya Desak Be'inan. And the reason is because wooden kelim to be Makabel Chumah has to be similar to a sack. You have in the Pasuk, in Parashas Shmini, when it talks about the concept of Chumas Kelim, it mentions a couple of different materials over there. It mentions wooden Kelim, or clothing, or leather, or sack. So sack would be, a sack is a type of cloth as well, but it's a coarser cloth that's used for sacking. The point is that we have a comparison, we have a hekesh between wooden kalim and sacks, so therefore wooden kalim is makabel chumah only if it's similar to a sack. Ma sack metalka moligarekam, a sack can be carried around empty or full, afko metalka moligarekam, therefore any wooden kalim that's going to be makabel chumah is only makabel chumah only if it's also carried both full and empty. For example, Rashi explains that tells us, therefore, that clay etas suyin b'midah are not makabel chumah. We have, for example, in the Mishnayos of Shloisha Trisenhain, you have a couple of examples of that, where it's about bob b'midah, Torah miklum, where you have a wooden keli that holds more than 40 sah of liquids, or 60 sah of dry can be heaped up on top, so therefore it can hold more of that. such a large wooden keli is not makabel truma, because if you tried to move it, you could move it around empty, but if you try to move it around full, it's going to break under the weight. So therefore, such a keli is not makabel truma. By the same token, then, a wooden keli that's never meant to be moved is not makabel truma. The shulchan is not meant to be moved. Why is it makabel truma anyway? Now, of course, Tosfos asked the obvious question. I mean, they moved it during all the 40 years in the desert. So, first Tosfos says that maybe we're talking about once they came into Eretz Yisrael and set up the Mishkan in various semi-permanent places. So, for example, in Shiloh, let's say the Mishkan was in Shiloh for 369 years. So then, fine, during all that time, they're not moving it around from place to place. So therefore, you can say it's a keli that's not meant to be moved. But also Tosfos says, listen, I mean, the fact is, even in the Midbar, they didn't just move the Shulchan by itself. They moved it together with all the other kelim, so we can't really call it a keli that's made to be carried. They did carry it, but only together with the other kelim, as opposed to when we talk about a keli that's metaltal, mole v'reikam, we mean that it's carried by itself. So the question is now, so the Shulchan shouldn't be makabel tuma at all. What's the problem if the Amei Ha'aretz touch it? And the answer is, Hai Nami Metalto Mola Vedekamu. As a matter of fact, the Shulchan is something that's moved around both empty and full. Kidur Shlomin, namely, sometimes they move it when the Lechem Aponim is on it. Kidur Shlokish, like Rishlokish explains, the Amr Rishlokish, my dichtiv ala Shulchan Atohar. Let's step back a minute. We're saying that the Shulchan is able to be Makabel Tuma. How do we know that? Well, the Pasuk calls it HaShulchan HaTohar, the Shulchan that has to be, the Shulchan that is Tohar. Miklal Shehu Tomei. Now, the implication is, you have to be careful to keep it Tohar. You have to be careful that it doesn't, not to allow it to become Tomei. Well, you have the same question. Vamai creates also the Nachasu, the Enim Makabel Tuma. So Rish Lakish is pointing out, you have the question not only on the Mishnah, you have the question on the Pasuk. Why is it calling it HaShulchan HaTohar? By the way, the Menorah is also called a Menorah Tehorah, but that's different. The Menorah is made out of metal. There's no question it's makabel tuma. But a Menorah Tehorah means that it's made out of pure gold. The Shulchan is not made out of pure gold, after all. It's made out of wood plated with gold. So why do we call it a Shulchan Atahor, implying that it's makabel tuma? So Ela Melamed Shemagbihin Osei. So this teaches us that on the Yavim Tovim, they would lift it up. Umarin Bo La'Oleh Regalim Lachem Upon Him. They would show the Jews who came on Aliyah L'Regel, they would show them the Lachem Upon Him on the Shulchan. So the point is, it is picked up with the Lachem Upon Him on it. So now it's more like a sack that it's picked up with its contents on it, with the Lachem Upon Him on it. So that's why it's makabel tuma. So they would pick it up and they would show it to the Oleh Regel. V'omrim lahem, they would tell them, Ru'uchi baskam lifnei amokim, look how precious you are to Hashem, siluka kisiduroi. When the Lachem upon him is taken off the Shulchan, which after that they would take off the Lachem upon him and distribute it among the Kohenim, kisiduroi, it's just as fresh and just as hot as it was when they put it on. Now remember, they put it on one Shabbos and they take it off the following Shabbos. So it sits on the Shulchan for a week. And they're showing them the nest. That nevertheless, it's still fresh. You would expect it sitting there for a week. You would expect it to spoil. You certainly wouldn't expect it to be fresh. At least it would be stale. But they show them the nest that it was not. And how do we know that it was in fact fresh? The Amr of Yeshua ben Levi, nest gadol nasa b'lechem upon him. A big nest happened with it. Kisidure kach silukai, just as fresh and hot as it was when they put it on the Shulchan, it was just as fresh when they took it off. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Losum lachem choyim v'yoyim hi lachoy. This is a part of when David is running away from Shaul. At one point, he comes to Nov, which is where the Mishkan is located at the time, and he asks Achimelech the Kohen Gadol for some food because he's starving. Achimelech tells him there's nothing else available except lachem upon him, and the pasuk describes the lachem upon him with the words Losum lachem choyim, to place hot bread v'yoyim hi lachoy, on the day that it was taken off the Shulchan. So we see, in other words, that when it was taken off, it was just as hot as when they first put it on. Now, how exactly are they showing the people that? I mean, the people, the pashtos, aren't all coming close enough to actually be able to see it. So Tosfos actually says that, fine, they would see that it was fresh. They wouldn't necessarily see that it was hot. In fact, Tosfos says it wasn't necessarily, Tosfos discusses, was it necessarily hot? After all, it was baked Erev Shabbos. The pashtos is not still going to be hot even when they put it on the Shulchan on Shabbos, let alone when they take it off a week later. So Tosfos says, okay, maybe what they did is maybe they kept it in the oven until Shabbos morning, and then they took it out. So maybe then when they put it on the Shulchan, it was in fact hot because they kept it in the oven in order to retain its heat. But primarily, Tosfos says they would show the people that it's soft. Which they could do that easily enough. I mean, all you have to do, for example, is you stick a finger into it someplace and show that you're able to stick your finger into it and that the surface is soft. The Radbaz says also what it could be is everybody saw the lachem aponim on the shulchan. Then everybody saw them taking off the same lachem aponim and distributing it to the koyanim to eat. So everybody could go over to the koyanim and see that in fact the lachem aponim that they're eating is fresh. So that would be another way that Radbaz says. With that said, the Ritva has a different explanation. The Ritva says not only it was hot, but it was so hot that it was steaming, and you could actually look, the people could be looking from a distance at the shulchan, and they would actually see steam rising off the lachem aponim, even though it's been sitting on the shulchan since the previous Shabbos. So whatever the case, the point is that they were picking up the shulchan with the lachem aponim on it to show to everybody, therefore, for that reason, the shulchan is indeed like a sack, and therefore it is makabel tumah, which is why our Mishnah is saying that they would warn the koyanim, the amei ha'aretz, not to touch it. Okay, the Gemara asks, the tibuk li mishum tzipui, don't we have a different reason to say that the shulchan would be mekabel tuma? Before we ask that it shouldn't be mekabel tuma because the kli is also a nachas. Now we're taking the opposite view. Maybe it should be mekabel tuma whether we pick it up or not, because it's plated. It's plated with gold after all, and metal kalim are mekabel tuma whether you pick them up or not. In fact, we learn in a Mishnah. A regular table or a dulpaki. Rashi describes that a dulpaki is kind of like a folding chair. It's usually covered with leather, but here we're going to talk about where you put marble on top of it. So the point is, Rashi doesn't mean a chair as in like what you sit on. It's more like a card table or a serving table or something. And the Rambam also similarly explains that a dulpaki is like a buffet or a serving table or something. Anyways, shenifchasu, if the top of them caved in, so now you can't really use them as a table anymore, oishachipan b'shayish, or if you covered the top of them with marble, which marble is not makabel tumah, and in general, stoneware is not makabel tumah, and marble, of course, is a type of stone. The sheer behem makam anachas kosos, but you still have on the tabletop, you still have enough room to put cups. So you still have part of the tabletop is still functional; it hasn't caved in, or part of it has not been covered with marble. Part of it is still bare wood, and enough room to be able to put cups. Tomei, then it's still makabel tumah, because you can still use it for the original purpose. Rabbi Yehuda says you need a larger area, you need enough of a place, not only to put cups, but also to be able to put slices of bread and meat. Otherwise, you can't really consider it a table. Anyway, the point is, we see, therefore, that if you have, so this table, or this chair-like table, as Rashi is describing it, it would have been makabel tumah, but now, because you covered it with marble, it's not. So we see that the marble helps take away that it can't be makabel tumah anymore. All the more so it should be the other way around, says Rashi, that if you have a wooden keli that is plated with gold, and gold is makabel tumah, then it should be makabel tumah. The entire surface of it is plated with gold, so it should be makabel tumah. So that's reason enough for the shulchan to be makabel tumah, whether you pick it up or not. Why aren't we mentioning that point? The chitema shiny atishitim dechashivi v'leibatli. So you're going to answer, maybe the difference is, the shulchan was made out of expensive wood. It was made out of atishitim, which is an important, expensive kind of wood, and maybe therefore it's not bottled to the gold. Well, hanicha le reshlokish. Well, that would work out according to the shlokish's understanding. He says that the Mishnah that we just quoted from Kalim that talks about a table that you covered with marble is only applying to Kalim of Axelagim that come from overseas. Axelagim, the Pashtos, is you would understand this. Rashi explains Axelagim means some kind of wood which is not particularly kosher. Tosfos says maybe Axelagim is the name of a place where they import such wood from. whatever the case, Rish Lakish says that when you have a table made out of that kind of wood, then sure, if you cover it with marble, then it's not makabel, and you covered the entire thing, then it's not makabel tumah anymore, because then the wood is bottled to the marble. Ava b'klein masnim loy batli, but continues Rish Lakish, if the table was made out of masnim, which is a more important kind of wood, the Gaonim bring a possibility that masnim might be what's called in English ebony, which is a very hard, very dark wood. They use it for like really fancy furniture. So then Rish Lakish is saying, if the table was made out of masnim, loy batli, then even if you cover it with marble, it's not bottled because the wood is so important. Well then, Shapir, well then, that would answer it. Since the Shulchan is made out of Atzei Shittim, which is also an important kind of wood, then Rish Lakish would say, therefore, the fact that you plated it with gold doesn't make a difference, and that the wood is not bottled to the gold. Therefore, as a wooden keli, it wouldn't be Makabel Tumah unless you pick it up Mole Verekon, as we said before. Elul Rav Yechanan, Da'oma, Apidu B'Klein Ma. Nami batli, but according to Rabbi Yechanan, that even if it's made out of masnim wood, even if it's made out of expensive wood, still the wood is bottled to the covering. So in the case of that mission, the wood is bottled to the marble. Therefore, the table is not makabel tumah. In our case over here, we're saying that the wood is bottled to the gold. Therefore, it would be makabel tumah. Then what are you going to say? Why do we need a reason that the Shulchan was picked up to say that it's Makabel Tumah? It should be Makabel Tumah just on the basis of the gold plating. And according to Rav Yechanan, it doesn't matter what kind of wood is underneath the gold. Either way, it's bottled. So you're going to make a distinction maybe between a plating that does, that's Oymed and one that's not. So you would say, Rashi explains that Oymed means it's not held on with nails. So you would say that the Shulchan and the Beis Hamikdash, maybe the gold plating was not held on with nails, therefore it would fall off easily. Whereas maybe the Mishnah and Kalim is talking about when you attach the marble to the wood with nails and therefore it stays on. Tosfos gives a different explanation of Oymed. Tosfos brings actually two explanations. One is that, now we know, how was the Aron made in the Mishkan? So we know it wasn't, that even though the Pasuk says, Bitzipisa oise zahav toho, you should plate it, but we know that the Yerushalmi actually holds that it was literally plated the way you plate wood, but the Bavli says that not. They had the famous thing, Sholosh Aronis Osa Betzalel, that you had, Betzalel made three boxes, and they fit one inside the other, they nested one inside the other. So Tosfos says, maybe it was the same thing with the Shulchan then. You had the wood Shulchan, then you had, on the outside of it was a plating of gold, but not really a plating, but rather a Shulchan-shaped piece of gold that would slide over it, and another Shulchan-shaped piece of gold that would slide on the inside of it. Well, therefore, it's not actually attached. So that would be actually similar to Rashi's explanation that it wasn't held on with nails. Another explanation that Tosfos says is, listen, marble is very thick and very heavy. So therefore, it's omen ve'elav in the sense that even if you took away the wooden table, the marble would still be strong enough to stand on its own, as opposed to maybe the gold plating of the Shulchan was thin enough that it wouldn't stand on its own. You would need the Shulchan underneath it in order to hold it up. Anyway, so if you're going to try to make a distinction between that, between whether the plating is held on with nails or not, or whether the plating is substantial enough to stand up for itself or not, can't be. We find that Rish Lakish asked Rav Yechanan this very question. When you're saying, Rav Yechanan, that either way the wood is always bottled to the covering, are you talking about when the covering is oymed or not, held on with nails or not, according to Rashi and according to Tosfos, the second explanation, strong enough to stand by itself or not? And b'choifes l'bizbizav, oy b'she'en choifes l'bizbizav. And also, many times a table, a regular table, that is, we're not even talking about the one in the Mishkan, has a rim around it to keep things from falling off. So are you talking about only if the levizbizav, only if the rim around the edge is also covered, or is it even if it's not covering the rim, still the wood is bottled to the covering? But Amalei and Rabbi Yechanan tells him, Loishnav et Tzipoy Oymed, Loishnav et Tzipoy Oymed, it doesn't matter whether the plating is Oymed or not. Loishnav et Choyfes Lavizvizav, Loishnav et Shaini Choyfes Lavizvizav, doesn't matter whether you covered the rim or not. Either way, the wood is always bottled to the covering. And unless, as we said in the Mishnah there, unless you have a small part, unless you have enough of the table left uncovered to be able to put cups or plates of bread and meat, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then it's not Makabel Truma. And in our case, the other way around, since gold is Makabel Truma, then since the whole Shulchan was plated with gold, then it should be Makabel Truma, according to Rabbi Yechanan, for that reason alone. We don't care, according to Rabbi Yechanan, what the Shulchan is made out of. We don't even care whether what kind of wood it's made out of, whether cheap wood or expensive wood. We don't care whether the covering, the gold, is Oymed or not Oymed. Either way, should be Makabel Truma. So why are we saying that it's only Makabel Truma because you pick it up and show it to the Oiler Rebbe? So the Gemara answers, Ela Shiny Shulchan Dirachmana Karya 8. No, the reason why the Shulchan would otherwise not be Makabel Truma and why you need a special Posit to tell you that it is because the Posit calls it wood. So even after it's plated with gold, the Posit still refers to it as wood. Dichtiv, you have a Posit in Yechezkel, Hamizbeach 8. The Mizbeach, now, we don't mean the actual Mizbeach itself. Tosfos brings, actually, from Targum Yonasan on the Pasuk, even though on the surface we're talking about the Mizbeach, which would be the Mizbeach HaZahav, but really we're actually talking about the Shulchan, which is located near the Mizbeach. In the Heichel, there were three Kalim. You have the Shulchan on the north side, the Menorah on the south side, and the Mizbeach HaZahav in between them, and the Mizbeach HaZahav was slightly... It was basically on the midpoint, but it was slightly closer to the Shulchan than to the Menorah. So therefore, so that when it says the Mizbeach, it doesn't mean the Mizbeach, it means the Shulchan which is near the Mizbeach. So why it calls it the Mizbeach, we're going to talk about in a minute in the Gemara. Anyway, so it says Mizbeach 8, Sholosh, it calls it wood, so even though it's plated with gold, it's still called wood. Sholosh Amos Gavoya, it's 3 Amos tall, but Orka Shtayim Amos, its length is 2 Amos. Tosfos, by the way, in a different place, in Menachas, wonders, the Shulchan was not 3 amos tall. The Pasuk in Parashas Terumah, when it describes the Kalim, says that the Shulchan was only 2.5 amos tall. So Tosfos says maybe it means including the sniffing. We know that you had next to the Shulchan, you had those frames into which they stuck. The half tubes, you have the Shulchan went as follows. You have the Lechem Aponim is on the Shulchan, but you can't just put the Lechem Aponim, you can't just pile 6 Lechem Aponim, one on top of the other, they would break. So they had a whole contraption over there where between one Lechem and the next, they had three half tube shaped things made out of gold. So they would help hold up each one, and then those half tubes were held up in turn. Those were supported by frames that went on the side of the Shulchan that went from the floor up to above, up to higher than the height of the Shulchan. They're called in the Pasuk over there in Parashas Truma, they're called Ksoisev and Menach Yosef. There's actually, Rashi mentions in the Pasuk over there, there's a Machlokas, which one is which? Does Ksoisev mean the half tubes and Menach Yosef means the frame, or the other way around, Ksoisev means the frames and Menach Yosef means the half tubes. Whatever the case, the point is, Tosfos says over there that maybe that's what we mean when we say three amos tall. Anyway, the Orka Shtayim Amos, the length of it is 2 Amos, the corners of it are made of the same material as it. In other words, they didn't make the corners and attach them afterwards. They were carved out to begin with as part of the Shulchan. But Orka the Kiros of 8, the full length of the Shulchan, meaning the tabletop and the walls of it, were made out of wood. By Daber Eli, Zah Shulchan, Hashem Lefnei Hashem, and he spoke to me, this is Yechezkel describing the Malach that's going around and guiding him around the third Beis Hamikdash, and he spoke to me, this is the table that is before Hashem. So we see he's talking about the Shulchan, even though he begins with the word Hamizbeah, he really means the Shulchan, and therefore, so we're saying that even though the Shulchan is made of wood plated with gold, but the Pasuk calls it 8, meaning that it's gold all, that it's wood all by itself. So therefore, as a wooden keli, it wouldn't be Makabel Truma unless you pick it up. Molei v'reikon, and that's as we said before, since they do pick up the Shulchan when it's full of lachem upon him and show it to the people, then therefore it's Makabel Truma. But were it not for that, it wouldn't be Makabel Truma. So they want to ask, by the way, posak the Mizbeach to see in the Shulchan. why is it the pasuk is beginning with the word mizbeach and ending with the shulchan? So fine, we're talking, the whole pasuk is talking about the shulchan, as Targum Yonason says, but why does it begin by saying the word hamizbeach? So Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish to Amu Tavayu, so both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish say, Bizman Shabes Mikdash Chayim, Mizbeach Machaper Al Adam. As long as the Mizbeach was standing, as long as the Beis Mikdash was standing, the Mizbeach was Machaper for a person. Achshav Shulchan Shal Adam Machaper Olav, whereas nowadays a person's table is Machaper for him. In what way is a person's table Machaper? Rashi says by doing Achnosas Archim. And Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin in Perek Chelek that talks about the greatness of Hachnosas Urchim and giving Urchim food, where it says over there, the Gemara mentions over there, that even Micha, the infamous Micha who made Pesel Micha, the Gemara says, the Malachim over there wanted to punish him. His house was actually so close to Mishkan Shiloh, it says over there that the smoke from the Karbonus that he brought to his idol would actually intermingle with the smoke from the Karbonus that had been brought in Mishkan Shiloh. So the Malachim were very angry at Micha, and they would have had him punished. But Hashem tells them, you know what, Micha is a great Machnes Urdach, and he gives food to everybody who comes in his way, so therefore I'm not going to punish him. So we see the greatness of, how giving people food, legima, as the Gemara calls it over there, as Tosfos quotes, is a great thing. It's mechaper for a person's avedus. So that's one reason why a person's shulchan is mechaper for him. Marsha, in a couple of other places, discusses other reasons why. First of all, a person says divrei Torah by the table, so that helps be mechaper for him. But also, Marsha, it mentions a very interesting point in Bava Basra. The Gemara talks about over there that there's various things that a person is supposed to do in order to remember the Churban. One of those various things that Chacham made that a person is supposed to do or not do, Zeichel LeChurban. One of them is that when a person is setting his table and he's setting out all the dishes and all the food that usually would be there, he should leave one out and it'll be conspicuous that it's missing as Zeichel LeChurban. There should be one thing that you would expect to see on the table and is not as Zeichel LeChurban. So therefore, Marsha says when a person does that, when he deprives himself of putting that one thing on the table, that's like bringing a korban. And therefore, in that sense, that's like the mizbeach. In any case, so that's why the pasuk starts by describing it as a mizbeach and then finishes ze hashulchan asher lifnei Hashem. And the bottom line is that we're saying, though, that the shulchan is mekabel, that even according to Rabbi Yochanan, that when a keli is plated, then we go according to the plating. Nevertheless, that's with the exception of the shulchan, because the pasuk calls it eight. Actually, the Rambam learns our Gemara to be saying that the Rambam learns that any plated keli, we don't go according to the plating. What the Rambam learns is that all plated kalim are not makabel chumah. The way we were learning our Gemara so far is there's a difference between whether they're covered with marble, which is not makabel chumma, versus gold, which is, and we're discussing over here why is the gold not making it be makabel chumma. The Rambam actually learns that any kind of plated keli, we say whether it's plated with something that's makabel chumma or whether or not, either way, the plating doesn't make a difference. And it's not makabel chumah because it's plated. So the Rambam would understand our Gemara differently. And in fact, the Ravid disagrees with him, and many of the Noisei Kelim of the Rambam have a bit of a hard time explaining how the Rambam would understand our Gemara. In fact, I think one of the, maybe it's the Ravid or somebody else, I know, the Rosh actually argues with the Rambam on this. He says apparently the Rambam learned the Mishnah, but he didn't learn the Gemara. But the Kesef Mishnah and the various other Noisei Kelim on the Rambam deal with how exactly the Rambam would understand our Gemara. Okay, going on, the Mishnah had said Kol HaKelim Shem Mikdash Yesh Lehem Shniyim Chuvah. And he said that all the Kelim in the Mikdash, they had duplicates and triplicates of them. In case they become Tamei, then they can use the duplicates instead. But we said that all the Kelim require Tevila except for the Mizbeach and the Choshes, except for the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Mizbeach and the Choshes. And the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Eliezer had said in the Mishnah, Mipnei Shein Kekarka, because they're considered like the ground. Because it says Mizbeach HaDama Tassali. So that's what Gemara is going to explain. Mizbeach and the Choshes give Mizbeach HaDama Tassali. So that mizbeach is called a mizbeach of earth. Since earth is not makabel chumah, neither is that mizbeach. So here's where Tosfos discusses the point that we brought up before, that the fact is that the fact is that in the Beis Mikdash, they had a mizbeach made out of stones, But still, what it is, in other words, that since the one that Moshe made was meant to be, instead of in the future they would have one made out of stones, which is not Makabel Tuma, therefore the one of Moshe, even though Mizbeach Adama primarily is talking about the fact that eventually you're going to build a Mizbeach made out of stones, but nevertheless we can learn that it also means that Moshe's Mizbeach made out of wood plated with gold is not Makabel Tuma either. And Mizbeach HaZahav, where do we see that Mizbeach HaZahav is not Makabel Tuma? So, Dichtiv, HaMenorah VaHaMizbechos. You have a pasuk that describes that the Levim, or that the Bnei Kohos in particular, are in charge of transporting the Menorah and the Mizbechos, in plural, Itkush Mizbechos, Zelazeh. So we have a hekesh between one Mizbeach and another. If the one Mizbeach is not Makabel Tuma, then neither is the other one. Even though the reason of it being Mizbeach HaDama doesn't apply to Mizbeach HaZahav, but nevertheless the hekesh tells us that it's not Makabel Tuma. Then the Mishnah had said, that the Chachamim said to Rabbi Eliezer, because they're plated. So the Gemara says, Adarav, kivin de mitzupin ninu mitamu. What do you mean? Didn't we just talk about that, on the contrary, because they're plated, they should be able to be Makabel Tuma. So what do the Chachamim say? So Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's not Makabel Tuma because they're Kakasa. What are the Chachamim saying? And because it's plated, that would be a reason that it should be Makabel Tuma. Ema, see, fine, you have to fix up the Mishnah. You're right, the Chachamim would say that no, we disagree not only with your limud from the word Mizbeach Adama, we disagree with the din that you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer. You say the Mizbeach is not Makabel Tuma, we say it is, the Mizbeachos in plural are not Makabel Tuma, we say they are because they're plated with metal, and because of the plating they're Makabel Tuma, like we discussed before. That's one possibility. The Ibori Sema, Rabbanan, Rabbi Eliezer, Ka'amri. The other possibility is that when the Chachamim say, Neshem Mitzupin, they're telling Rabbi Eliezer, think of it according to your logic. My Daita, what are you thinking? They would be Makabel Tuma, Mishum de Mitzupin, because they're plated, and therefore you need the Pasuk Mizbeach Adama to tell us that they're not. No. Mivka Batel, Tzipuyan Gabayu. The plating is bottle to them, and therefore we don't care about the plating. Therefore, we focus on the fact that they're made out of wood. And since, unlike the shulchan, which we said before, is picked up, those mizbeches are never meant to be picked up and moved, except of course when they were traveling in the midbar. Then therefore they're considered kli eitzah osir v'nachas, and therefore they're not makabel tuma. So according to that, Mifnei Shein Mitzupin is a Chachamim telling Rabbi Eliezer a reason you're thinking because they're Mitzupin, they're Makabel Tuma, whereas in fact really they're not. So because as we said before, the Pasuk calls them eight. So now here's where you have Rashi versus the Rambam. Here where Rashi is saying that, in other words, that even without them being plated, the plating is bottle, and since, as we said before, the Pasuk calls them eights, then therefore they're not Makabel Tuma. As opposed to the Rambam would learn that it means that in general, plated kalim are not Makabel Tuma. There's a sicha, one of the Rebbe's Hadronim for Masechta Megillah, where he discusses, in Chelek Tzayin, he discusses this point. In particular, why is the Rambam forced to explain the Gemara in such an odd way, which, as we're saying, you know, the Noisei Kalim have a hard time explaining how the Rambam would fit this into the words of our Gemara. It seems much more straightforward according to Rashi. And so the Rebbe explains that the Rambam would say, since Rebbe Eliezer was a Talmud of Beis Shammai, as we find in different places in Shas, therefore he follows the general Shitta of Beis Shammai, and the Rebbe goes and discusses at great length in the Sikha over there how we often find that Beis Shammai looks at the generality of something, and Beis Hillel looks at the details. So therefore, so over here, Rebbe Eliezer would say, you look at the generality of it, it's made out of wood, therefore it's a wooden keli, and wooden kelim are able to be makabel tuma. Therefore, we don't care about the plating, not the detail, which we're not looking into. Whereas the Chachamim are saying that no, that you have to look at the details as well. The fact is, the detail is that it's plated, and therefore you have to take that into consideration as well. And then the Rebbe goes on to discuss how you have examples of that, of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's shittis in that throughout Shas. Giving an example from every one of the Shisha Sedarim. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Abahu, Amar Rav Elazar. Talmidei Chachamim ein ur shel Gehenem shelates behem. Talmidei Chachamim, even if they have to wind up in Gehenem, the fire of Gehenem has no power over them. Kavachomer mi salamandra. And we can know that by a Kavachomer from the salamandra. The salamandra is a creature which is created from fire. As Rashi describes, you keep a fire burning in a place continuously for 7 years. Eventually, they'll come out from it a creature called a salamandra. And that creature, if a person smears himself with the blood of it, then they will be impervious to fire. They'll be fireproof. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that you used to have the idol Moloch, where the ritual of serving Moloch was Maveris Bonav Ba'esh, where a person would have his children pass through a fire in honor of Moloch. And the Gemara mentions over there that Ochaz, one of the kings of Yehuda, who was a terrible Rasha, was worshipping this Moloch, and he wanted to give his son Chizkiah to have to go through that ritual. But Chizkiah's mother, ahead of time, smeared him with blood from the salamandra, and that way he was able to survive it. Anyway, so we make a kavachomer from the salamandra, and we say that to show that the Talmid Chachamim are impervious to the fire of Gehenna. Umas salamandra shetoldas eshi, madach the salamandra, which itself comes from fire, and yet has soch midoma in Ursha Lebesvai, and a person who smears his skin with his blood, then the fire won't have any ability to affect him. Tamid Chachamim should call Gufan Esh. Well then, the Tamid Chachamim, where their entire body is fire, because their whole Metzius is the Torah that they learn. Dichtiv haloi koi dvori ko esh ne'um Hashem. As the Posit says, aren't my words like fire, says Hashem. Alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that they are immune to the fire of Gehenna. So even if they have to wind up in Gehenna, they still are not going to be affected by the fire of it. Then the Gemara continues, Omer Rish Lakish, Ein Ursha Gehenna Shelekes L'Poshe Yisroel. Now, by the way, we did have, Marsha points out, earlier in our Masechta, we had Acher, where smoke came out of his grave for a while. So in that sense, there you have a Talmid Chacham, where the fire of Gehenna did have a certain power on him. But, he was a special situation. He was much worse off than most other Talmid Chachamim, because after all, he was Yedei Ribonu Meskaven Limerdvoi. He knew Hashem so closely from having been one of the Chachamim who went into the paradise, and still he went bad. So in fact, there was a Tosfos over there where Reb Meir says we have to save Acher, if nothing else, even if he himself is not a Sefer Torah anymore, even if he is Metzius, is not Torah, at least if nothing else, he's like a cover for a Sefer Torah, where the din is when you save in the Sefer Torah, you have to save the cover as well, you have to save the mantle, so if nothing else, Acher is no worse than a mantle. But ordinarily, we're saying the regular Talmid Chachamim, then the fire of Gehenna has no power over them, as we learned from the Salamandra. And the Gemara continues, Omer Shlokish, Ein Ursha Gehenim Shevetes Poshe Yisrael. The fire of Gehenna has no power over Poshe Yisrael, over Jews who committed Averis, Kavachomer Mimizbach Hazal. And a Kavachomer from the golden Mizbeach that we were just discussing. Now, Tosfos, by the way, points out, there is a category called Poshe Yisrael of Gufon. There is a category where they were Poshe Yisrael with their bodies, where the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah about them that they remain in Gehenim pretty much indefinitely. So Tosfos says, okay, we're talking about over here regular Poshim. We're not talking about Poshe Yisrael of a Gufon. One thing, by the way, the Gemara mentions over there, that one definition of Poshe Yisrael of a Gufon is Karkafta, like Manach Tfilin, a head that didn't put on Tfilin, which is weird. We got the concept of a Karkafta, of putting on Tfilin on somebody for the first time, where that makes them, now they're not in that category anymore, and that's why we make such a big deal when we have a chance to put Tfilin on a Karkafta. Anyway. So also Tosfos mentions, by the way, in Eruvin, if we're saying over here that the fire of Gehenna has no power over Talmid Chachamim, and it also has no power over Poshe Yisrael, so what's the advantage of the Talmid Chacham over the Poshe Yisrael? And Tosfos says over there the difference is the Poshe Yisrael, they might have to be exposed to the fire of Gehenna. It's not going to burn them, but it will blacken their faces. Whereas the Talmid Chachamim don't even have to go through that. Anyway, so continues the Gemara. So Kavachomim Mizbach Hazahav, Ma Mizbach Hazahav She'ein Olav El Ka'ovi Giner Zahav. The Mizbeach Hazahav has on it a plating of gold, only the thickness of a gold dinner. And yet Kamashonim Ena Ursha Ledesbay. And yet for hundreds of years, twice a day, you're making a fire on it to burn the Ketores, and the fire never overpowered it. It never melted through. None of the gold ever melted away, and the wood itself underneath was never burnt. Tosfos in fact brings that when Moshe was told to build the Mizbeach Hazav, he was wondering about that. How is it possible? Such a thin layer of gold and it's not going to burn through. And Hashem tells him, you know what? Listen, the same thing as by the snare where it didn't burn. So the same way over here, it won't burn either. By the way, the Mizbeach HaChitzon, you didn't have that problem because we said before the Mizbeach HaChitzon was filled up with dirt. It didn't have a top. They filled it up with dirt. So obviously, therefore, there was no problem that it's going to catch on fire. But because the Mizbeach Hazav, yeah. So it has a thickness of a gold dinner of gold, and still the fire can't affect it. Poshi Yisrael Shemalei and Mitzvahs Kerimin. Well, then the sinners among the Jewish people who really are full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate. And we know that because the pasuk says Kefela Harimon Rakosech. Your Rakosech, where the simple meaning of Rakosech means your temples, like the sides of your head, are like a slice of pomegranate. But so in Poshita Pshat, then you have the whole Shir Hashirim is a dialogue between two lovers, between a man and a woman who are deeply in love with each other, and he's praising her and describing her appearance. And at one point he says Kefela Harimon Rakosech, your temples are like. Are like the red and healthy looking like a slice of pomegranate. But the whole thing, the whole Shir HaShirim is really a metaphor for the love between the Eibishter and the Jewish people. And the word Rakosech is Altikri Rakosech El Rekonin Shabach. They don't read Rakosech, but rather Rekonin, the empty ones among you. So even the empty ones are Kerimon. They're still full like a pomegranate, like a mitzvah like a pomegranate. So how much more so that the fire of Gehenna should not be able to do anything to them? A few weeks back, and then in one of the weekly Fabrengans, they had a little vort over there. There was a story about a Satmar Chassid who didn't have any children, so his Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel Shalom, sent him to our Rebbe for a bracha. And so he was in Yechidus. The Rebbe asked him, so recently I know your Rebbe had your site. What did he talk about? He said he made a siyum on the Sefer Chagiga. So what did he talk about? So he said, he talked about this line over here. And he said, and our Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel, said, I don't understand. If they're Poshi Yisrael, how can they be Malay Mitzvah Kerimon? What? The Satmar had said, how can we call them Malay Mitzvah Kerimon if they're Poshi Yisrael? Yeah. And the Rebbe said, you know, I learned that Gemara, but I was wondering the other way around. If they're Malay Mitzvah Kerimon, how can we call them Poshi Yisrael? So the Rebbe was, our Rebbe was always looking out for the best in a year. Anyway, so there is a sicha. There's another hadron on Chagiga that the Rebbe made, also in Chelik Tzayin, where the Rebbe discusses our Gemara at some length of the year. Among other things, why are we learning the Talmud Chacham from a salamandra? A salamandra is not even a kosher creature with a type Tosfos wing that is a type of lizard or a type of mouse or something. Why are we, if we're mentioning this in connection with Mizbeach HaZahav, then why don't we bring the second statement about the Poshi Yisrael first, and then the one about the Talmud Chachamim? Why do we need two different metaphors for them anyway? Anyway, the Kitzur, the Rebbe explains that like this. The Talmud Chacham, as we're saying, his whole Mitzvah is Torah. He's completely permeated with Torah. So now, on the other hand, though, sometimes you can have, unfortunately, a person learns Torah, so he's like the salamandra that is in fire for years and years, but what comes out in the end, a non-kosher creature. The same way, you can have a person who's learning Torah for many years, but unfortunately, he does it in a way where he doesn't come closer to Hashem. Where on the contrary, it feeds his yeshus and whatever, and he ends up becoming like a chayat meya. Nevertheless, though, we're still saying that still, the fact that he's permeated with Torah saves him from the fire of Gehenna. Then, on the other hand, you have the Poshi Yisrael. Now, they don't learn Torah. However, they do mitzvahs. Their mitzvahs, we can't say, is embedded within them. You can't say that their mitzvahs is mitzvahs. A person's mitzvahs is not mitzvahs. Rather, the mitzvahs are like a plating, like a covering over them. So therefore, we're comparing them to the Mizbeach HaZahav, and we're saying, just like the gold of the Mizbeach HaZahav protects them, the same way their mitzvah is a covering over them that helps protect them from the effects of Gehenna. Marsha, in fact, points out that that's the point. In other words, mitzvahs are considered precious as gold, therefore we're comparing it to the gold plating of the Mizbeach HaZahav. But that's why we have that's why we have two different metaphors, and that's why first it talks about the Talmid Chachamim, meaning we're talking about obviously Talmid Chachamim who did Averis, but they have the advantage of being Talmid Chachamim. Only then do we discuss the ones who they don't have that advantage, but they have the advantage of being full of mitzvahs, and therefore that protects them like armor that protects them against the fire So now, in fact, in that other sikha that we talked about before, about the Mepnei Shein Mitzupin, The Rebbe ends up explaining one of the points you have over there is one of the machlokas in Bishamai Bishilo, where we see that Bishamai looks at the generality of things and Bishilo looks at the specifics, is we're going to have in a few months from now, Bez Hashem, in Ksubas, we're going to have the machlokas Bishamai Bishilo by a chasana. What do you say in praise of the Kala? Where Bishamai says, Kala kamos shi, you just praise the Kala however she is, you don't exaggerate. And Bishilo says, Kala no bachsuda. And this is an example. Bishamai says, you look at the generality. In general, she looks very plain, so therefore, that's what you have to say. Whereas Basil says, you have to consider, her husband, after all, saw something in her, that's why he's marrying her. So therefore, when you look at that particular, then you realize that she really is, in his eyes, Kalano Bachsuda, and therefore you can feel that as well, and therefore that ties in with this, that every Yid is, after all, a Kalano Bachsuda, because after all, the Eidishta chose every Yid on an individual level. And so that ties in with what we're saying over here about the Talmid Chachamim and the Poshi Yisrael, that nevertheless, there's still ones chosen by Hashem, and therefore we're saying they have that protection from Hashem. And that ties in more generally with what we were talking about at the end of the Masechta over here, how even the Amiya Oretz, we still, during the Yom Tovim, there are times when we consider that they're Tahar just as much as the most careful Chavar, because we're all part of one people, we're all part of one Sibur. Hadron Alachoyim of HaKodesh, or Slikal on a Sechta Chagiga, and with that, we've also finished Seder Moyim. Hadron Allah Seder Moyim, Vahadra Chalon. Mazel Tov, everyone.